tiger!
Order, order.
'Twas the week before the week before the week before Christmas, and all through the house not a creature was stirring, apart from the Governor of the Reserve Bank, Graham Wheeler, who crossed Bowen Street on Thursday morning to brief members of the Finance and Expenditure Committee on his final monetary policy statement for 2015. That was in Committee Room 3, the morning after the Speaker, David Carter, had wound up the year in the debating chamber at the end of the adjournment debate.
The House stands adjourned until 2 p.m. Tuesday, 9 February 2016. Merry Christmas.
And it was an early Merry Christmas for the opposition after Mr. Carter played Santa and delivered them a surprise gift from the government when he announced his ruling on a request for an urgent debate from Labour's corrections spokesman, Kelvin Davis, on the government's decision revealed a few hours earlier to inform Serco that its management contract on Mount Eden Prison would not be renewed.
The decision not to renew Serco's contract is a significant development. Given that it has been announced on the final sitting day of the year, there will be no reasonably foreseeable opportunity to debate the issue.
Explaining his ruling to members, Mr. Carter anticipated argument from the government that the decision had not been made by one of its ministers, but by the Corrections Department's chief executive.
However, he is not answerable to this House. The Minister of Corrections is.
Nevertheless, the government's leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, asked Mr. Carter to convey his ruling to the Commissioner of State Services.
In order that he might make some representations about the limitations of the State Service Act when it comes to ministers being able to direct the chief executives of departments who make decisions that ministers cannot affect, but then, of course, now, by your decision, held accountable in this House.
I am sure that there's no doubt this Minister, Ian Rennie, will be aware of my decision already.
But Mr. Carter's decision had been taken in a wider context.
It is absolutely critical that the public has confidence in our correction system. I accept that the matter requires the urgent attention of the House. I therefore call on Kelvin Davis to move that the House take note of an urgent matter of public importance.
And more of that snap debate now from Rhys Lyon.
Leading off the debate, Labour's corrections spokesman Kelvin Davis described the decision not to renew the Mount Eden prison contract to Serco as a failure for the government's privatisation of prisons agenda.
Any private company that gets hold of a prison contract is going to cut corners because the purpose of a private operator running a prison is to make money. They're going to be staff cuts because that's the first way that a private company makes any money is by cutting the numbers of staff. And when they cut the numbers of staff in a prison, that means there are fewer staff to look over the prisoners, and that is exactly what happened in Mount Eden. That is the very reason we've seen all the problems in Mount Eden from the very outset.
But Corrections Minister Sam Lotoanga said the prison's problems were not due to it being privately run.
That's absolutely untrue, and this has always been about safety and security and not about ideological viewpoints. It's just that their hatred of members opposite of these types of private provision of services, actually it disguises their huge contribution that they have provided to social services in this country. For example, early childhood education. Who provides some of the top quality early childhood education in this country? What sort of providers? Well, often they're private providers.
However, Green MP David Clendon wasn't convinced and questioned the timing of the announcement.
If ever a government has sat in this House on the last sitting day of a year with egg liberally smeared on its face, this is the day and this is that government. And the fact that we have delayed effectively 6 months to make this announcement, to begin to terminate this contract, has exacerbated that problem, made it worse. And we should learn from that and acknowledge it.
And back to Sam Lotoanga, who's due to be replaced as Corrections Minister next year following a cabinet reshuffle announced earlier this week. He said he stood by the Corrections Chief Executive's decision on Mount Eden.
And I fully support this department. Sir, it's been an honour being the Minister of Corrections. Merry Christmas.
Corrections Minister Sam Lotoanga speaking in the urgent debate on the non-renewal of Serco's Mount Eden prison management contract.
Rhys Lyon will be back with the Reserve Bank Governor and the Chief Spy in the committee rooms, while back in the chamber, the Prime Minister's decision to replace Pizzetta Sam Lotoanga with his predecessor in the corrections portfolio, Judith Collins, was the subject of this question on Tuesday from Opposition Leader Andrew Little.
Is the reason he's reinstated Judith Collins as Minister of Corrections
that he now recognises she was the one who negotiated the disastrous Serco contract, and it's time for her to clean up her own mess.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Many reasons why I've reinstated Judith Collins, but one of them is because she was an excellent Minister in Corrections and Police.
The hollow laughter on the opposition benches was even louder at Mr Key's answer to their leader's next question.
What assurances has he sought from Judith Collins that she'll stop misusing her position to malign public servants and line her husband's pockets?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr Speaker, I take offence from that question.
Labor then reminded the Prime Minister of the offence caused by one of his comments, with this question for him from their Christchurch East MP, Porto Williams.
Does he stand by his statement, quote, "you back the rapist," end quote, made during question time on the 10th of November 2015?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Yes, in the context of a robust debate.
Supplementary.
Order.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Porto Williams.
Does the Prime Minister understand his statement, quote, "you back the rapists," end quote, has caused offence to members of the opposition, victims of sexual and domestic violence, and more than 13,000 people who signed a petition asking for him to apologise?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr Speaker, I stand up very strongly for the victims of sexual offences. This government also supports that. Mr Speaker, the comment was in relation to what I believe was advocacy only for the criminals from the opposition.
Next day, though, a month and a day after making the comment, the Prime Minister, John Key, rose before question time to make this personal explanation.
Mr Speaker, during question time on the 10th of November, in response to a supplementary on question number one, I made a comment about the opposition which caused offence. Subsequently, the matter has been raised several other times in the House. I've reflected on my comments, and on this last sitting day of the year, so close to Christmas, I'd like to withdraw and apologise for that response.
The spirit of goodwill then moved across the chamber.
Point of order, Andrew Little.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. In recent weeks, statements have been made by members on this side of the House about you, which reflect upon you. And I wish to draw to the attention of this House that correspondence has gone to the Chair of the Privileges Committee today, accepting that those comments were unparliamentary and expressing regret for them. All of which demonstrates that this House is capable of acting, if not in the spirit of Christmas, in the spirit of the Bloody Red Baron.
I thank the member sincerely.
The spirit of goodwill then retired from the chamber, leaving the opposition leader and the Prime Minister to resume normal relations.
Now that the Serco turkeys are cooked, is he worried that Judith Collins is eyeing up his back with a carving knife?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, there's only one turkey in this House and I'm looking at him.
Leaving behind the cut and thrust of the debating chamber, here's Rhys Lyon with news from the committee rooms.
Appearing before the Finance and Expenditure Committee on Thursday to give an update on the Reserve Bank's December monetary policy statement was its Governor, Graham Wheeler, who delivered the news he had already announced earlier in the day.
Look, I'll be brief. As you know, we reduced the official cash rate by 25 basis points to 2.5%.
The cutting of the official cash rate would have an impact on mortgage interest rates, and the Reserve Bank Governor explained factors leading to the decision.
Globally, economic growth is below average and inflation is low. Growth in our own economy softened over 2015. The exchange rate since August has risen, and that's been unhelpful. House price inflation in Auckland remains high, posing a financial stability risk, but there are some early signs that it may be moderating.
Graham Wheeler also gave an update on the outlook for the country's economy.
There are many uncertainties and risks to the outlook. Dairy prices could remain weak for longer. The current El Nino could deteriorate, and net migration could stay high for longer. So we concluded that monetary policy needs to be accommodative to help ensure that inflation settles, and we'll continue to watch the emerging flow of data closely.
Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler speaking to the Finance and Expenditure Committee on Thursday. A day earlier, the Government Administration Committee heard submissions on Sue Moroney's members' bill seeking an extension of paid parental leave from 18 weeks to 26. One of those submissions came from lawyer and mother, Eliza Prestige Oldfield.
I want to address this issue of children as a choice, which is often presented again as an argument against the bill. The idea is, well, you should wait until you're financially set up, be responsible, then have children. Children may be a choice for an individual couple, but society as a whole needs somebody to have children and look after children. And the work done looking after children is really, it really is work.
Eliza Prestige Oldfield said she spoke from experience.
I was very surprised, actually, by how difficult it was. And at the moment, it falls primarily to mothers who do it on an unpaid basis. And that's inequitable. And it's really not good enough in 2015.
Lawyer and mother Eliza Prestige Oldfield with that submission on the Parental Leave and Employment Protection, 6 months paid leave and work contact hours amendment bill, which is due to be reported back to the Chamber by March the 16th. Also during the week, on Tuesday afternoon, the Intelligence and Security Committee, chaired by the Prime Minister, John Key, held the annual review of the Government Communications and Security Bureau and Security Intelligence Service and heard from SIS Security Director Rebecca Kitteridge, who outlined the growing global concerns about Islamic State.
When I started as Director of Security in May 2014, the so-called Islamic State was barely talked about in New Zealand. And now, a day rarely goes by without news of some act of violent extremism associated with IS. The number of New Zealanders fighting alongside or supporting IS remains small, but has increased. And in particular, we've seen an increase in the number of New Zealand women travelling to Syria and Iraq.
The SIS director didn't give specific numbers involved in the increase in women going to Syria and Iraq, and wasn't sure what they did when they got there.
It's difficult to see what they do when they go. We definitely have intelligence that they went. Whether they are going to fight or whether they're going to support other fighters is not clear, but it's a real concern that they would go at all.
SIS Security Director Rebecca Kitteridge, who also got a mention in the Chamber later in the week, with this anecdote from Labour leader Andrew Little during the adjournment debate.
I was at a meeting a couple of months ago getting one of the briefings from the head of one of our security agencies, and there we were looking at matters of great national sensitivity and security, and all of a sudden the head of the SIS who was briefing me threw her hands over the papers on the table and said, "Wait, is this place secure?" And we looked out on the balcony and there was one of the LT McGuinness men with his high-vis jacket on. As you all know, they've all got numbers on them. And there was the number, 007. Now,
opposition leader Andrew Little speaking in this year's adjournment debate. Also during the week, on Wednesday, the Finance and Expenditure Committee heard submissions on the Keep Kiwi Bank bill in the name of Labour's David Parker, which would legislatively entrench New Zealand Post's ownership of Kiwi Bank. In a written submission on the bill, the Clerk of the House, David Wilson, notes that entrenchment would restrict the future ability of the legislature to decide matters by simple majority and should be utilised only for important provisions of a constitutional nature. The clerk said the aim of the bill to restrict the full or partial sale of Kiwi Bank could be achieved by other means. The Keep Kiwi Bank bill is due to be reported back to the House by April the 14th. And the week in the committee rooms was rounded off with the Local Government and Environment Committee meeting in Christchurch on Friday and Saturday for submissions on the Greater Christchurch Regeneration Bill, which is due to be reported back to the House by February the 25th.
That report from Rhys Lyon, with the clock nudging 6 p.m. and the screw caps already coming off the Sauv Blanc for the annual Parliamentary Press Gallery Christmas do, the Speaker summed up the year in the House.
Honourable Members, this chamber has sat through 2015 for approximately 550 hours, and I know many of you have spent considerable part of those 550 hours. So as I bring this debate to a conclusion, I certainly have no intention of taking it through to 551 hours.
The length of this year's adjournment debate had been set at an hour and a half by the Business Committee, with the Speaker having the last word after 17 other five-minute contributions, starting with one from the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, who also summed up the year in numbers.
Mr. Speaker, I move the Government Notice of Motion number one in my name relating to the adjournment of the House and the adoption of the sitting programme for 2016. Mr. Speaker, this is a debate that will conclude the activities of the House for 2015 and set down the times at which the House will sit during 2016. It's worth noting, sir, that this year the House has sat for some 88 days, a larger number than was the case in 2014, although that was interrupted by the election. Some 120 bills have passed through their third reading, And the number of occasions on which the House has had extended sittings has been 5 times. The number of weeks the House has sat has been 30 weeks. The number of question times, 87. The number of oral questions to members, 1,044. And the number of hours the House has sat, some 655 hours and 10 minutes, as at Thursday, the 8th of December. Tuesday, the 8th of December. Mr Speaker, one thing I would say at this point is I would like to express some congratulations to all members of the Business Committee for the way in which that committee has developed or continue to develop over the past year. It is a place where I think the most poignant points of politics are understood and where the opportunities for people to have their views expressed in the strongest possible terms is organised. Mr Speaker, the extended sittings that came this year were largely devoted to Treaty of Waitangi settlement bills. These are bills that the whole House agrees with, and it makes sense that the House itself agrees on the process for those bills passing, and it does enable those recipients of those settlements to be here for the historic third readings of those bills. All of that work, sir, I think is a tribute to the Business Committee and its ongoing operation. So now I need to thank some people. The Speaker, of course, yourself, Mr Assistant Speaker, the presiding officers, and all those who assist in the Clerk's Office, including the new Clerk, David Stevenson.
Mr Brownlee was interrupted then by an interjection from Labour's Grant Robertson, reminding him that the new clerk is David Wilson and that David Stevenson is actually the General Manager of Parliamentary Services.
David Stevenson? Oh, David Wilson, sorry. Yeah, well, thank goodness you're here. So I do apologise to David Wilson. He knows who I meant.
Mr Brownlee was followed by several speakers who acknowledged their colleagues' contributions to the workplace with various awards. First to start handing out the Oscars was the Greens co-leader Matiria Touré.
So I am very pleased to announce the Green Party's inaugural end-of-year awards. I know, it's exciting. I have the nominations. So here we go. And we may well give you presents. Yeah, let's give them presents. I'll tell you what. My lovely assistant, Gareth Hughes, over here. So for the ExxonMobil Contribution to Oil Drilling Award, runner-up, Labour, for refusing to rule it out. But the winner goes to Simon Bridges for keeping the oil industry going through support of its hair products. Great dedication, Simon. Slick as, bro. He can get some chocolates. Give them to Jerry. He wears his underpants on the outside Public Defender Award, sponsored by Marvel Comics, goes to Michael Woodhouse for revealing to New Zealand the grave dangers of worm farms. Michael has got our backs. We're safe under his watch. The Land Transport Association's award for the most creative U-turn, it turns out. So runner-up, Labour, for simultaneous U-turns on capital gains tax and superannuation. But the winner, the Green Party. That's right, the Green Party, for ruling out, then ruling in, then ruling out the booze bill. I want my gift. Thank you, I'm so proud. I want to thank my producers, Mum and Dad. You're awesome. The award for the most dedicated backbencher politician. This was hard fought for, this one, I can tell you. Runner-up, Paul Foster Bell, for his passionate visual adoration during the Prime Minister's speeches. Puppy dog. But the winner goes to Mike Hosking for selfless support for his dear leader and the creative use of public broadcasting.
Oh, we're liking you.
The Lump of Coal Special Christmas Award, sponsored by Charles Dickens. Jointly awarded to John Key and Peter Dunne for voting against feeding the kids in school. Clearly the answer to the question, please sir, can I have some more, is no, you cannot have any more. The New Zealand Men's Rights Association Award for the Protection of Traditional Values. Runner-up, John Key, for having the guts to say out loud that Cabinet is dominated by middle-aged white men because he appoints on the basis of merit. Ladies, smarten up. But the winner goes to Louise Upston the first Women's Affairs Minister brave enough to define feminism as bad and beauty contests as good. Well done, Louise. But the chocolate prize is going to go to Puta Williams for her amazing support over the walkout over the rapist comments. Awesome. Chocolate well deserved. The Hairstylist Association of New Zealand International Hair Ambassador of 2015 Award. Who do you think might win this? Runners up, Peter Dunn and Simon Bridges for effort. Good effort, guys. But the winner by a landslide, John Key, for putting New Zealand and ponytails on the world stage for all the wrong reasons. Well done, you guys. And, not quite finally, the Foot and Mouth Award, sponsored by MPI for most regrettable statement. The winner, Judith Collins. I am confident that Serco will bring the highest standards of professionalism, safety, rehabilitation and security expected by the government to Mount Eden Prison. Well, wasn't she right? They did expect that. That's exactly what they got. But the gift of chocolate goes to Kelvin Davis, given today's breaking news. That was a scalp worth fighting for. And the final award, sir, for tonight, the Plunkett Karatani Award for Healthy Development and Meeting All Growth Milestones. And that goes to my very own co-leader, James Shaw, for, well, just being a good all-round boy.
While the Greens' Materia Ture handed out awards, Labour's Deputy Leader, Annette King, delivered a variation on the 12 Days of Christmas with a list of gifts compiled by her caucus colleague, Carmel Cipollone.
Of course, the first gift from this government is the Prime Minister ignoring detainees. Well, he was far too busy, Mr Speaker, with all those selfies that he's been taking and putting up on Twitter. The second gift from the National Party have been two toy sheep. Two toy sheep and a $500 bill to fix them. High priority it was to have it at the Moby Christmas party. And I have to wonder, and maybe Mr Speaker could help us with this, what on earth were they doing to the sheep? The third gift from the National Party are three $6,000 sofas. Well, we all thought that Jenny Shipley's $3,000 sofa, and there's only one of them, was over the top. And I have to once again ask, what on earth do they need such upholstered sofas over there in Moby? The fourth gift of Christmas from the National Party is the $45 million to fix NovaPay. And the question we ask is it fixed? Well, are there any outstanding debts that still need to be paid? Well, of course, the fifth gift from the National Party are five flag options. Five flag options they gave us for Christmas. And, of course, the Prime Minister, I think his vanity project's just about to flutter away as the number of those in the referendum go nowhere near the number they hoped. And the sixth gift of Christmas has to be unemployment at 6%. And climbing. You see, the National Party are ambitious for New Zealand, but not if you want a job. The seventh gift of Christmas is 7 long years of this national government as their ministers become more and more weary and worn out and out of touch, and I have to say on a daily basis look more like dried arrangements. Then we have the eighth gift of Christmas, $80 billion gross debt. And 80 different excuses as to why we have got $80 billion of gross debt. Then the ninth gift of Christmas are 9 bills through urgency. Oh, wasn't that fun? Wasn't that fun, especially for those that stayed and debated? I notice it wasn't a high priority for most of the ministers to be here to debate the 9 bills of Christmas. Well, then here's my personal favourite, the 10th gift of Christmas, of course, is 10 pretend bridges for Northland. 10 pretend bridges for Northland, promised by the pretend Minister for Transport, but backed up by the pretender for the top job, Stephen Joyce. And then we've got the 11th gift. I'm nearly there, Mr. Speaker. The 11th gift of Christmas is the $11 million apartment in New York. Well, let's be honest, nothing's too good for the workers. And then the 12th gift of Christmas has to be the $12 million Saudi farm fiasco. Mr Speaker, those are the 12 gifts. I just want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas.
After Oscars from the Greens, Materia Touré, and the traditional Christmas song from Labour's Annette King, National's Chief Whip, Tim McIndoe, turned his adjournment debate speech into a school prize-giving.
And as it's school prize-giving season, and as MPs, we get to go to our fair share of them, I want to hand out a few of my own, particularly as we've had some awards handed out to the government from the other side, and it would be churlish of us not to reciprocate. So, in no particular order, the Sir Basil Arthur Memorial Prize for Parliament's Loudhailer is awarded to Dunedin North MP Dr David Clark for the worst and most frequent assaults on the eardrums in 50 years. Dr Clark also shares the Tony Ryles Sartorial Shocker Trophy for his regular appearances in the House in that fluorescent crimson jacket. The co-recipient in his absence is former ACT leader Rodney Hyde for the unforgettable Canary Yellow Jacket. He receives this award as a warning to his parliamentary successor that should the garment ever be seen in this House again, it will result in the wearer being referred to the Privileges Committee by someone who has developed quite a bit of form in that in recent times. The "It was my party and I'll cry and sue if I want to" award goes, of course, to Colin Craig. The Yippee Award for Resurrection Studies goes to the Honourable Judith Collins. The Taylor Swift Award for reportedly spending weeks touring New Zealand without anyone actually noticing goes to Andrew Little. The Johnny Walker Trophy for incoherence at question time goes again this year to the right incomprehensible Winston Peters. The Leo A Familia Asanate Lolle Taylor Memorial Award for the most unexpected utterance on national television goes to ACT leader David Seymour for "The French Love the Appendage". The Paul Goldsmith Prize for Best Recovery After Falling Off the Stage award goes to Stephen Browning for achieving the remarkable feat of remaining standing despite apparently falling asleep within 15 seconds of the commencement of most of his speeches. The David Parker, Jerry Brownlee, Brokeback Mountain moment goes to former Labour leaders Phil Goff and David Cunliffe for sharing a bench in the back row of the opposition crossbenches so eagerly since Mr Little's recent reshuffle. And finally, sir, the Masochism Award for choosing to spend hours in here listening to us all goes to you and your merry men, Chester Burrows, Lindsay Tish and Trevor Mallard, and to the Clarks, Sergeant-at-Arms, Roland, Maureen and the Chamber Gallery team.
National's Chief Whip, Tim McIndoe, who was followed by the Speaker, David Carter.
Can I just note, as some of you have noted, that it has been a robust House this year. It is a political debating chamber. I expect nothing less. There have been political tensions through the year. Can I just make a couple of comments about things that have occurred outside the House? And in that regard, I want to acknowledge the work of David Stevenson as General Manager of Parliamentary Service. I think under his guidance, he is showing leadership and there has been a change within Parliamentary Service whereby we are seeing them concentrate on servicing members of Parliament. Still some work to be done, a tremendous progress in that area. I also want to acknowledge the seamless change of guard with the Clerk of the House. David Wilson, you have been a pleasure to work with over the last 6 months. I congratulate you. To my fellow presiding officers, Deputy Honourable Chester Burrows, Lindsay Tish and the Honourable Trevor Mallard, I think we are a credible team. We work hard in this place to preside over some fairly difficult debates in a way that is truly unbiased. Thank you to that team for your help. Finally, to honourable members, can I take this opportunity of wishing you all a very merry and safe Christmas. I'm looking forward to seeing you back early in the new year for the battle of 2016, but now it is whānau time. Let's go and enjoy it. The question is that the motion be agreed to. Those of that opinion will say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. Then the ayes have it. The House stands adjourned until 2 p.m. Tuesday, 9 February 2016. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas from us, Tom Fruin and Rhys Lyon. We'll be back with the first program for the year in the second week of February. Till then, all the best for a safe, happy and politics-free holiday season. And this program was made with funding from Parliament.